One Song Nation, put those kids to bed and prepare to make more kids.
That's right. That's right. It's Valentine's. I'm trying to do a sexy voice. It's Valentine's Day here on One Song. That's not sexy enough.
You sound like Bruce Wayne doing Batman.
I know it's not sexy. I will stop. It's Valentine's Day. You're listening to One Song. Let's get it on. Nope. That sounds like a sporting shout. Let's get it on. Woo!
Let's get it on.
Okay, if you're new here, I'm actor, writer, director, and sometimes DJ Diallo Riddle.
And I'm producer, DJ, musicologist, Luxury, a.k.a. the guy who talks about interpolation on the internet.
And I think it's only appropriate that today, a day for lovers, is the day that we choose to celebrate one of the sexiest songs of all time. A song that was number one in the U.S. A song that went platinum. And while there are no exact statistics for this, probably accounted for more unplanned pregnancies in the 1970s than any other recording.
Very likely. It's very likely. It's a very sexy song. It equals sex to many people. It's become a staple for any self-respecting makeout tape.
Or makeout playlist.
No, I still call them tape. I think tape is cool. Just calling it a tape.
Let's just still call it a tape.
Let's just call it a tape. It established Marvin Gaye as a true sex symbol, and it established the wah-wah pedal as the horniest sound on planet Earth. Let's face it. Like, it just, you get a little bit of a wah wah, and then
it's amazing.
Boners are popping.
This time on One Song,
boners are popping. It's the boner popping edition. It's Let's Get It On.
I've been really trying, baby, trying to hold back this feeling for so long.
I have to say, I'm so excited about this episode. I have a lot to say about Marvin Gaye. He's one of my favorite artists of all time. But before we start, I have to ask Luxury, do you consider yourself to be romantic?
Sure. Hell romantic.
What's the most romantic thing you've ever done?
A very sexy man. That's different from romantic, isn't it?
Can
we make the distinction actually for the world to understand?
Yeah.
What is the distinction between romantic and sexy? Like, where is the line? Do we even know?
You know, I think you are sexy to the person you are romantic with, hopefully.
Okay.
You would hope it's a two-way street.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Do you think that this generation, because on, you know, TikTok and stuff, I see so much cringe content of like young people that think what they're doing is sexy, but it's just cringy. Do you think that they really think, do you think what they're trying to be is romantic and appealing to their partners, but they think the road to that is sexiness?
You know, I think at the end of the day, every generation thinks that romance died the second that they got married and settled down, and they look at the kids and they're like, that's not romantic. But I think the kids can figure it. The kids are all right, is what I'm saying. Like, you know, at the end of the day, it all comes down to sense of humor and, you know, a certain
authenticity, just being yourself.
Yeah, just being yourself.
I think the cringe comes from when it's so clear that they're trying to be something that's not natural.
I think most of the cringe probably comes from either people trying too hard or people being old judging the young.
Oh, there's also that. That is also cringy.
That's
so
also
let's stop.
Very cringe.
I will stop personally. You can keep going.
No.
Well, y'all, let's get it on. Well, maybe I should say let's get into it. Let's get it on has a different meaning today. Let's talk about.
I don't want to be hauled in front of Heartbeat HR again.
Not again. Let's talk about Marvin Gaye. He's one of your favorite artists.
Absolutely.
I know you've got a lot to say. For listeners who are maybe less familiar with Marvin, and frankly, I'm one of them, teach us all, educate us. Why does he matter to you?
I think Marvin is so important. I mean, like, he really is. Look, nothing is created in a vacuum, and there are so many artists from Jackie Wilson to Smokey Robinson, you know, who are absolute innovators in this field. I do think that Marvin is a very, if you're going to talk about music, a very convenient bridge from R&B sort of representing the sort of boogie-woogie, rollicking styles of like the 50s, and even the Motown song of which he was a part of in the beginning of the 60s, into what we think of as today as contemporary R&B. Like, you can draw a direct line from Marvin to everybody from D'Angelo to Bryson Tiller in ways that it's just harder when you're drawing that line from Smokey and Sam Cooke and some of the other artists. And
so are you making a distinction between kind of more of a soul singer versus a sort of, well, I suppose they're...
It's hard to talk about this stuff, right? Like, even growing
What's
up...
What's the distinction that you're making there just now between Smokey versus
I think it's the introduction.
I'll be sure or something.
I think it's in some ways it might be the introduction of just blatant sexuality mm-hmm. into the music. In ways that it wasn't there before. And I think that's one of the reasons why we chose Let's Get It On for this. Because there are other Marvin Gaye songs that we could do on one song. But we were coming up on Valentine's Day.
Sure.
And we were like, what's the sexiest song we can do? And we were just almost immediately agreed that Let's Get It On is sexy, regardless of the genres of music you're into.
Right.
It's a sexy song.
It's become a template. It just represents sex so much so that in this past couple years, it's become the TikTok meme of just the intro, the first 10 seconds.
Wah-wah.
Just the wah-wah in the intro is enough to trigger. We've got a million videos on TikTok alone for which just the intro to this song represents sex and tells you that you're about to watch a video that's either a sexy video or it's kind of a joke about like a skit about sex.
Yeah.
But this is a song that instantly conveys sexiness culturally.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm glad you bring it up about culturally because in preparing for this episode, I had no idea that this song originally, you know, to just to place it in its historical context, we're coming out of a period where he's released one of the most celebrated albums of all time.
That's right.
What's Going On?
Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we.
One of my absolute favorite, like, if I'm in the right mood and I hear certain songs like, you know, Flying High, like, it's hard not to well up with tears. Like,
well, let's pause on that for a second because that's an important album. Now, What's Going On was a really important record for not just Marvin, but for Motown. I'm sure you saw the same things I did about Barry Gordy.
It was his best-selling album for
Motown.
But
Barry Gordy refused to put it out and didn't want to put it out and said it would be a career-ending mistake. He said it was the worst thing he'd ever heard. So there was actually a back-and-forth battle. It took several months before Marvin finally put his foot down, and I think he self-released it originally. So there's a lot of controversy surrounding that, but then it became a hit. And as you're in the middle of saying, represents... It's a political album more than it is a personal sexual record.
It was a very political album. It was, you know, it's hard to say that any political music doesn't owe something to What's Going On. But, you know, I think a lot of people were probably expecting another really political album from Marvin. And as it turned out, no, they got this album, which was very open with its sexuality, for the lack of any other term.
Oh, absolutely.
And Let's Get It On didn't start out that way. Let's Get It On as an album and both as an album and as a single, both started off political just like their predecessor. But then something was just going on in his life. He was growing apart from his wife, Anna Gordy at the time.
Yeah.
He's falling in love with this new person who finds herself in the studio, Janice Hunter, who he will eventually marry before the end of the decade.
We'll get into all that
because
first of all, Anna Gordy is 17 years older than Marvin is, and Janice is 17 years younger than Marvin is. So something going on with the number 17. Age range stuff going on there, interestingly. But yeah, that's a big thing happening in his personal life right in this moment. And to your point, the transition from making a political record to making a sexual record happens in this song, which when we get to the song story, we'll get into more detail. But I think you were in the middle of saying, like, the song itself started out as a political song, didn't it?
Started out as political, and the same way that What's Going On was like over the top open with its political messages, this was an album that was eventually going to be over the top in its celebration of sex. Mm-hmm. And I think that it was in the David Ritz book that, you know, a case can be made, a strong case can be made.
This is the David Ritz biography of Marvin Gaye, yes.
It's called Divided Soul. And he makes a strong case that this song and this album in some ways creates the slow jam.
Yeah.
And we want to talk about that. Like, is this the first, as we think of it, modern slow jam?
That's so interesting to me. And I think that is accurate. So we're going to get into what slow jams are and sexuality on this episode.
We're going to define sexuality with this episode.
Diallo, I just want to take a moment to put out there on the public record, people need to know this about you.
Okay.
You and Bashir, your partner in crime for comedy making for the last 20 years, you co-created Jimmy Fallon's Slow Jam the News.
Oh, yeah. President Obama's taking a hard stance on immigration. He wants to let everyone inside. You got to do it the right way.
I mean, to Jimmy's credit, Jimmy has a outsized hand what goes into that show. He has a great writer brain, and he came to us. He's like, hey, I want to do something called a slow jam in the news, where we do a slow jam, but we talk about what happened in the news. And at that point, Bashir and I did go off and write what we thought essentially would sound like an Usher song.
Okay. I was going to ask, it wasn't based on Let's Get It On.
It wasn't based on Let's Get It On. It was more like the R&B of our era, like Shy and Silk and Usher. Shout out to Usher. I think, you know, depending on when you're listening to this, I think the Super Bowl just happened. So, you know, that man got out there and performed to the Super Bowl, which is crazy for Atlanta. My hometown. But like, yeah, it was really ambitious because, you know, only super fans of Jimmy Fallon would even know this. But when we sat down to write the first one with the Roots, you know, it went over really big. It was on his very first episode. And then they were like, we got to do it again. And so we actually wrote an entirely different song for the second one, about the AIG, you know, finance scandal of the time. Like, it was really.
What was that based on musically? Did you go to a different era for that?
Like, Nice and Slow by Usher was like our go-to on that one. And we were like, can we talk about AIG? You know, like, we were going to write an actual brand new original R&B song every
you
single
made
time
insurance
we did
sexy.
That sketch.
You made
and
insurance
then at some
sexy.
Point, even Jimmy was like, we're killing ourselves. Like, there's a reason why people do this full time for a living. All that. Okay. So we eventually settled in on this one version of the song that was similar to the first time we ever did it. So we didn't have to write a new slow jam, the new song every single time. But, you know, writing an effective slow jam is not that easy, as it turns out.
No, challenging.
And
no.
Trying to make it funny is even harder.
That's so funny. Well, the idea of a slow R&B sort of ballad where it's romantic, sexy, right on that line that we were discussing earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, that idea has existed
sure,
for some time.
Sure, there have always been love songs and there have always been ballads.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the difference here, again, is sort of the unchecked, raw sexuality, and let's be honest here, the raw, unchecked Black sexuality. I mean, you gotta realize
to be said.
We're just coming out of the civil rights movement. Black people are just starting to grow their hair natural. And this, in some ways, like, to free sexuality is the next step one could assume in the political movement. And I do find it really interesting that, you know, something like What's Going On comes out and it's so overtly political. Just 2 years later, he comes out with an album that's overtly sexual. And now, as a kid growing up, I always heard, you know, so many baby boomers and rock journalists say, like, oh, you know, the 70s let down the idealism of the 60s. You know, everybody was trying to make the world a better place in the 60s. You hear a little bit of that in What's Going On. And then by, you know, the middle and late 70s, it's all about sex. And everybody's given up.
Sex and partying
trying to make,
and funk and disco. Right?
And everybody's kind of given up on making the world a better place. But I will say, in defense of Marvin and those who were into freeing up the sexuality of the nation and the you know, the mass, you know, human mind, if you will, you know, there had been a lot of religious trauma, you know, and there still is, you know. So to them, this would have seemed like the next step. And I know that Marvin Gaye said in releasing Let's Get It On, he really wanted to make sure that people saw sex as a way of connecting with God. And
absolutely,
so to him, after fixing society through political means, it was important for him to try and fix people's spirituality and their view on God via sex.
Well, that's so important to talk about, too, in the context of Marvin and his life. Because Marvin is a person, such a troubled figure historically.
Totally.
Just like looking at his story is really tragic. I mean, not just the way he was killed by his father, shot dead at age 40.
Heavy.
Heavy stuff. But his whole experience with his father and his father's sexuality and his father being a preacher and his hidden transvesticism.
Which, again, is something that I feel like I didn't know about his father's sort of ordeal about that. I was fascinated to learn that the E at the end of gay was not there at his birth.
That was him separating himself from his father.
Separating himself, but also giving
associated.
A shout out to Sam Cooke, who also had a silent E at the end of his name.
Yeah.
And I guess that Marvin had to deal with, like, you know, schoolboy taunts, you know, with the having the last name gay. So in another way, like, this E solved a lot of his own personal issues.
But you were just saying, I mean, he was obviously so traumatized by that early childhood experience of his father's conflicted sexuality, it sounds like, and his father's being a preacher, that the sort of mix of church and sexuality and music for Marvin Gaye was an avenue to figure it out in a lot of ways, to sort of understand
and express
himself. It's a
really interesting story. Apparently, if you look at the Midnight Special episode that Marvin Gaye did in the mid-70s, there's a person who looks like a woman in the audience wearing a wig and
that's
a dress.
His dad, right?
And it's his dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, again, like, just something like, considering that his father was like this diehard preacher who, you know, I don't think it can really be debated, abused his
Absolutely.
Wife,
tortured
abused
him.
His kids, and, yeah. and like tortured him and never spared the rod, so yeah. to speak. It's just a really intense story.
So Marvin getting into his sexuality with this song, with Let's Get It On, yeah. was obviously a choice that he made that was even more fraught and weighty. It's already culturally in 73 to be doing it was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I think financially, from the perspective of like the like
Motown
record label not yeah. wanting this big change to happen, it was yeah. a big choice. And last but not least, personally, his own personal experience, he's being incredibly brave and vulnerable to come out and say, I'm a sexual being, sex yeah. is okay, it's 1973 and I'm Marvin Gaye and Motown, be damned.
And yet the reception of this album is remarkable. Like, you know, again, growing up in the shadow of the baby boomers, I would have thought that What's Going On was the biggest record of his career, but no, Let's Get It On comes out and not only outsells What's Going On, but it puts him on a whole new level with a pop audience. Like this song, Let's Get It On, goes to number one.
Yes.
A overtly black sexual song goes to number one, and in a lot of ways allows for the Barry Whites. And even it causes a career change in the songwriting of people like Lionel Richie and Maurice White with Earth, Wind & Fire. Like, it opens up almost like a whole new genre and a whole new space for R&B that to some extent continues to this day. I think that when we think about R&B in the 60s, it's kind of rocking. It's yeah. kind of like a version of like the British rock and the American rock. Like, they kind of have like these dance tempos. From the 70s on, R&B goes towards love and romance and lovemaking, whereas rock sort of stays on a, like,
right.
you know, get up and rage out.
But vibe. To your point, and the explicit sexuality that's ushered in with this song, before it was romance, it was James Brown is pleading. Mm-hmm. There's like sex, there's sexiness and there's romance, but it's not as, like, James Brown screaming is not sexy right. in quite the same way as Let's Get
no,
It On
this
crooning.
Is, this is orgasmic this, screams
right.
on the record. I mean, like, we haven't even talked about some of the other songs on the album, but You Sure Love to Ball, like, you know, there are voices
he's not pulling
doing
any
things
punches.
On there
not pulling any punches.
May not be heard again for a while. And I think the only person who might have gotten to it first might have been Serge Gainsbourg with,
right.
You know, his songs of like the
Je t'aime moi non plus.
Okay, the foreplay is over. We told you, put the kids to bed.
God.
Put the kids to bed.
Okay
after the
it.
Break, we'll be pressing play on the stems to this wonderful song and hearing Marvin Gaye's vocals as well as that wah-wah pedal when we get back. Welcome back to One Song. Okay, before we get to these sexy stems, you have a little bit of backstory for us.
Right, I'm going to lead you up. We were talking about What's Going On, which came out in 1971, yeah. and Barry, here's the exact quote from Barry Quote. I found that the worst record I ever heard in my life is what he said before he turned.
You talk about What's Going On or
What's
Let's
Going
Get It
On. When Marvin turned What's Going On in to Barry Gordy, the head yeah. of Motown Records founder, he said, this is the worst record I ever heard in my life. Marvin, you're absolutely insane, and this is going to be the biggest fiasco that ever was.
I can tell you right now, what Gordy didn't hear was a hit single.
Right,
he was like, I don't hear no singles.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't sound like anything that had come before, but that's how art works. And that's why there's this always this sort of tension between art and commerce.
And let me say, I have never stated this sentence in my life in defense of Barry Gordy. Listen, sometimes you hear a big swing and you're just like, there's no way. I right. remember the first time I heard Justin Timberlake's Sexy Back.
I'm bringing sexy back.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, I like house music.
Yeah, me too.
This
I know exactly what you're
saying. This is a weirdo song.
I thought it sounded so corny. Because the production is so corny.
Song.
It's like a bad mm-hmm. house track. The kick drum wasn't quite right. Like the sounds were wrong.
And
I totally
for
know what
a
you
solid
mean.
2 years as a DJ, you could not get out of not yeah. playing it. Like
and now
at
I
weddings
like it.
And clubs and everywhere. But the first time I heard it, I was like, this is weird.
And it felt corny with the come here girl.
It didn't even sound like a
back
good
and
house.
Forth
I was like,
them.
I was already into like Daft Punk and yeah. other cool stuff. I was like, this does not sound
so,
good.
You know what, Barry
but
Gordy.
Sometimes you just can't hear it, and sometimes the artist can.
He can't be perfect.
Barry Gordy. Generally a perfect individual, but not in this case. So he didn't like What's yeah. Going On. thought it was going to be a big flop.
By the way, fun fact, I don't know if you already know this, but do you know at the beginning of what's going on, there's like a party noise, people talking. Do you know who those people are?
Oh, absolutely.
You know who they are?
It's Don Cornelius, right?
No, it's...
Oh, I'm thinking of Got to Give It Up. That's Don Cornelius and a bunch of people hanging out in the studio.
Is that true? I don't
yes, it
that.
Is. But tell me, who are the voices we hear at the beginning?
It's two members of the Detroit Lions.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Whoa.
Who then tried to recruit Marvin to join the team. And apparently he did consider trying out until he was convinced not to do that.
Marvin's an athlete. You know, like, little side step here. But Marvin Gaye would go on Soul Train with his friend, Don Cornelius, and they would actually roll a basketball hoop onto the dance floor, and they would like shoot basketball. And I was thinking, like, you could have like the ultimate fantasy basketball team of like legendary singers if you had Marvin Gaye,
right? Prince.
Maybe Prince at like shooting guard. Yeah. Like, Master P apparently almost made the Pelicans.
Okay,
you know, and they just need like two other people. I'm gonna imagine French Montana. I think was pretty good at Rutgers. I'm sure the internet will correct me if I was not.
No, they'll be distracted by the fact that I had no idea there was a team called the Pelicans. I've been out of the loop for a while.
Pelicans, if I'm not mistaken.
I just haven't paid attention to basketball for quite some time. Is Cornbread Maxwell still playing?
Oh, gosh. We need to talk. But that's a subject for another time. But you were saying about Let's Get It On.
So just a little bridge to how we get to Let's Get It On. After the huge success of What's Going On, Marvin's next album was actually shelved in 72. He recorded an entire record called You're the Man, and Motown refused to put it out. But they did offer him the soundtrack to a blaxploitation film called Trouble Man. You have to remember, this is the era.
Great album.
Forgotten. I'm so excited album. To play. This is not my, I'm not going to use up my one more song. This is just a song I'm going to play.
Play
one
it.
Of my favorite songs from this record. So this comes out in 72, which is right. Isaac Hayes' Shaft comes out in 71. Curtis Mayfield's Superfly comes out a few months earlier in 72. It's in the air, these incredible composers, black musicians that are making these blaxploitation soundtracks. And one of my favorite songs I'm going to play for you now, this is Marvin Gaye. By the way, he composed and did the entire score himself. He's playing a lot of the instruments. This song is called T Plays It Cool, and it's such a funky jam. And you're hearing Marvin play everything on this except for sax. Here we go. And this is important to remember because it's such a great song. It's such a great jam. And this is where we have to reestablish the fact, by the way, that going backwards for just a minute, don't forget that Marvin Gaye was a multi-instrumentalist. And when he was at Motown, Marvin actually is the drummer on the Marvelettes' Please Mr. Postman. He's the drummer on Stevie Wonder's Fingertips.
Nice.
And he's a co-writer and the drummer on Martha and the Vandellas' Dancing in the Streets.
No way.
So Marvin, multi-talented.
Postman and Dancing in the Streets, two amazing classic tracks. Yeah. That's Marvin on the drums.
You got Marvin on the drums. And
But here, can I tell you one thing that you don't know about the Trouble Man soundtrack?
Okay, tell me about it.
I'm taking it back to me and Bashir's earliest forays into comedy. We wanted to find a name for our sketch group.
Okay.
And we were sitting there with our original sketch group members. Nobody was famous. Nobody had done anything yet, really, in the business. It was me, Bashir. Wyatt Cenac, who a lot of our listeners will know, Robin Thede.
I know them all. We got to get them all on the show. If you guys are listening, come on the show.
Nefertari Spencer, Nika King, who is on Euphoria, Angela Yarbrough, and Thomas Frazier. And the name that we decided for our group was Cleo's Apartment.
Oh, that's one of the songs on the soundtrack.
We got that name from the Trouble Man soundtrack.
Is it a good movie? Should we watch this movie and part of our? We're gonna do some one song movie nights.
We should. We should. You know, like all blaxploitation films, there's some stuff in there that is extremely ridiculous and goofy, but there's some that's like you're kind of amazed at like the filmmaking that goes involved, and they're all different.
Yeah,
some I love, some I'm just like oof.
And the music is great. This record, it sounds like you can imagine Portishead going crazy with samples on
Absolutely.
This. You know, it's like it's very Beth Gibbons, but it's Marvin Gaye. You know, it's a really great underrated record. So this is what he does after that record is shelved. Let's talk about the song Let's Get It On. It's released in June 15th, 1973. And this is 2 years again after What's Going On. Lots has happened in between. Song ends up going to number one for 2 weeks. It's his second number one hit after Heard It Through the Grapevine. and it's inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 2004. So how did the song get made? Marvin hooks up with a producer named Ed Townsend, who was formerly a doo-wop singer. He had a number 13 hit in the 50s called For Your Love. Basically, Gay is wanting to be the black Frank Sinatra. This is a quote from Smokey Robinson who says this. And part of this is hooking up with this particular singer who has experience working with strings. And he's
Townsend's
looking...
like the secret sauce for sure.
Townsend is the secret sauce. He's the co-writer of this song. He's the producer of the record. And it sounds like he is sort of a dream collaborator for Gay in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Importantly, Mr. Townsend has just come out of rehab for alcoholism. And when he started, he starts the song. He actually writes the first draft of Let's Get It On. And his lyrics are more religiously focused, I would say.
Mm.
It's more of a religious song. It's about overcoming addiction.
No.
And it is the line, Let's Get It On, is in there. But as hard as it is to imagine it being separated from its sexual meaning, at the time, Let's Get It On, for Ed Townsend, the original writer of that lyric, was Let's Get It On Life. Let's get on with life.
Oh.
Let's get past addiction. So it's really interesting to think of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, though, a middle step before we get to the sex version, where it's rewritten once as a political song.
Right, that's
so
what
clearly,
I was talking about, yeah.
Clearly, Gay is getting a little bit of heat for moving too far away from the, don't stray too far from this what's going on thing.
Yeah.
So the second version, he co-writes with Kenneth Stover, who's a co-writer, one of his collaborators. It's more political. I'll play a little bit of the demo for you now. And you'll hear the exact same music. You'll hear a lot of similar melodic and lyrical stuff happening. But the focus is more about, you know, understanding and brotherhood and not sex.
I know there should be peace and love.
Right? So peace and love.
I love that.
It should be. It's like the Ringo Starr. Isn't that his catchphrase? Ringo Starr is always like, peace and love. So this is the Ringo. Maybe that's where he got
politics.
It from. Maybe this is where Ringo got that from. I mean, peace and love is a pretty... That's been out there as a line. That second version, which was more political, co-writer Ed Townsend wasn't really crazy about it. And he just really pushed Marvin to go down this path of love and sexuality. That's what we're doing. That's what this should be about for you. So they got together. They rewrote the lyrics. And that's what the song is about. And I found this really cool quote. Marvin Gaye said, and again, going back to his personal journey and story, he was clearly making a very conscious choice to be vulnerable and to sort of take on this topic, which had been difficult for him, a difficult part of his life and upbringing. And he wants to embrace and in a way preach to the rest of the world that sex is okay. So what he says here is, I can't see anything wrong with sex between consenting anybodies. I like the word anybody's. I think we make far too much of it. After all, one's genitals are just one part of the magnificent human body. I contend that sex is sex and love is love. When combined, they work well together. If two people are about the same mind, have your sex. It can be very exciting if you're lucky.
I mean, I kind of agree. And I feel like, you know, I feel like his whole thesis with this album was like, we've made too much of sex in a bad way. And we've sort of forgotten that sex is absolutely part of our programming.
He's
and
sex positive in 1973.
He puts the T.S. Eliot quote into the album liner notes. You know, the life is, I believe, birth, copulation, and death, which, you know, depending on your mood, can be really depressing.
Yeah.
Really depressing or also really life-affirming.
Yeah, it is life-affirming. I think sex positivity is about taking what's been in the shadows because we're a Puritan nation in our history. It's like all this stuff about like the most fundamental fact of existence is the copulation part.
It's wild. I feel like with this song, Marvin makes R&B the music of making love. I mean, like nowadays, if like someone says, oh, I have a makeout tape, as we said earlier, like you don't immediately think like, oh, I'm going to put on like, you know, a rock song. Like, no, it really did plant a flag for R&B as like, the music of, to the extent that even that wah-wah pedal, I'm just thinking right now, became sort of the soundtrack for like, it reminds me of a classic stand-up routine by a comedian. I looked it up. I think his name is Jordan Brady, but he was on a show called The A-List, and all of us kids saw this routine, but it was in the early 90s, and he said, anytime you hear a wah-wah pedal, you think of sex. You know, you think of bow chicka wow wow. Like he coined
it's
that
Pavlovian
phrase,
trigger.
Bow chicka wow wow, yeah. Which was like,
oh, is that where that comes
porn.
From?
That's where that comes from, apparently. And I think it, you know, between Barry White and before Barry White, Let's Get It On, the wah-wah pedal just became synonymous with with making love.
It's a trigger, yes. Yeah. It instantly it excites the senses.
I want to apologize to my wife. We think that there's no less sexy phrase, ironically, than making love, but you're going to hear it a lot on this episode.
So speaking of wah pedal, we're about to get into the stems. We have to start with the guitar. The song starts with the wah guitar. So we're going to start with that in just a moment. First, let me back up and set the scene. It's March 13th, 1973. And one thing I do need to point out as we get into this is because there was the 50th anniversary, there was a lot of archival research that was done to sort of dig into who the performers were, because the notes taken on the day and literally the album liner notes are terrible. They just list the songs, and then there's a list of everybody who played on all the songs, but you don't know who played on what.
Oh, wow.
And part of why that's an issue is that half this record was made in Detroit with tapes that started years ago.
Hillsboro, USA.
And the other half was made in Motown West in Los Angeles.
Still West.
And so along the way, a lot of records were lost, and there is some speculation required to match who played what on what day. So I did a lot of homework and I did a lot of research, and I think I got a pretty good job, but it may not be perfect. Let's start with the guitar. So here's how Let's Get It On begins. I almost have to apologize for laughing, but it has gotten to the point where, because of the TikTok or because of just 50 years of it being in the culture, that wah, 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 it is almost a comical sexuality to it.
It's fantastic.
It's fantastic. So what you're hearing, that is a wah pedal. And what is a wah pedal? We all know what it is, but what is it? Right? It's one of those things. Well, it's a pedal that was invented in the mid-60s by the Thomas Organ Company. What you're literally technically hearing is the sound of an envelope that's opening and closing, so you're sort of sweeping through the EQ, you're hearing the highs, not the lows, with your foot. So somebody is, as they're performing on guitar, they're playing the part, the notes, they're moving their foot up and down, and it goes, wow. It's like opening and closing your mouth, essentially, is the closest analogy I could think. Wow, wow. That's why wah, wah is what it's called.
Wow.
And the origin, the origin of the wah, this is really interesting, comes from a white trumpeter in the 30s named Clyde McCoy, literally a McCoy from the Hatfield McCoy dispute.
Okay.
Okay. And in the 30s, he was famous for having a sound where he used his trumpet with a wah or a mute.
Yeah, with a mute.
And it sounded like this.
I'm just going to put this out there. I think he might be the guy credited.
Oh, no
but
doubt.
As it is jazz.
No doubt. Because it is jazz, he definitely stole it from a black man who did it first.
And there's probably a black guy out there.
100% true.
Lamont Hatfield, who might have beat him to it.
Maybe that's the origin of the dispute. Who knows?
You know, we may never find out. But
that is an important distinction to make. He is the one credited.
He's the one
I don't think we are confident enough to say he invented it.
We don't know.
He popularized it.
Sure.
Made it famous. And when the first wah pedal came out, they called it the Clyde McCoy.
Cool.
As a tribute to him. So, long story short, this becomes the sound of late 60s rock and roll, heavy rock. This is Hendrix. This is Clapton and Cream.
I mean, I typically hear that Hendrix is, you know, usually accredited with popularizing the use of the wah-wah guitar.
I think so, too. And I think it's because of this song. This is Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix. That is such an iconic sound and intro, and what's innovative and new, it's like a new tool for guitarists in the 60s, because you have to remember that if you're playing guitar in the 60s, your palette is relatively limited. You don't have all the effects that we've come to be accustomed to this day. And when the wah pedal came out, suddenly you could make it sound literally more human. It does sound like the human voice. It does have that wah-wah thing happening. So it becomes this new way of expressing your sound, new way of expressing your guitar. So I think that the Jimi Hendrix example is probably among the first, and definitely one of the, it blew up as a result of that, as everyone wanted to emulate and be like Jimi Hendrix, no doubt. All the guitar players that followed in his wake.
Who's the guitarist who plays this on Let's Get It On?
You have to guess which of these three names played the wah, because I did 2 hours of research to get to this. There are three guitarists named. There's Don Peake, Arthur Wright, and Melvin Wawa Reagan. Who do you think
Don
played
Peak,
the intro?
All the way, all the money.
It was Don Peak.
Oh, was it really?
Yes.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Don Peak, poor guy. He's like, it was me. The guy's name was Wawa, but he didn't play it. So he's out there on the internet trying to make a noise for himself.
Reasonably,
because it was him. So this is Don
Understood.
Peak playing that, and I'm going to play it for you now.
From
isolated,
the stems. Okay.
From the stems, isolated in the mix. Don Peak with that iconic intro. And one thing I want to say is that for the first, it's kind of fun isolating the stems on this for the guitar, because for the first minute and a half, he's doing that. He's kind of like playing around, noodling. There's not a lot of things that he repeats. There's not like a riff that he kind of like finds. And then a minute and a half in, he kind of locks into this kind of chuck. I'll play that for you in a second, which sounds like this. And I'll give you some drums so you know how that fits. Just on the 2 and 4, just keeping the tempo. And that's really all he plays for the rest of the song, aside from in the sort of B section. But the first minute and a half, he's noodling around. There's some mistakes that are really kind of funny. There's one in the interview to this day, he still cringes because you hear it in the background. And I had never noticed it until I heard it. And here it is. This is his clam at second 15. Okay, here it is.
I mean, it doesn't sound like a mistake to me.
Yeah, it's a little bit sharp. What up? It's just this tiny bit of, it's a tiny
Maybe
little thing.
Am, but I'm going to say, let that one slide, man. Because
they did.
To me,
they
I
let
think
it slide.
It sounds good.
They absolutely, here's one more clam. And they
call
let,
me Ed Townsend. I'm like, it stays in the mix. You hear that one.
There's a little bonk. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, but that, like, that one's very much in the mix. You hear that one. I got to say, right off the bat, I didn't realize until just now how much I like the drums on this song. Like, the drums bring so much. The way that they come in strong, the way that they keep the tempo, like, the drums are really, really good.
Should we hear some drums?
I'd love to hear some drums.
This is Paul Humphrey on drums, who also famously is the drummer on Steely Dan's Black Cow.
Oh, wow. Okay. Let's hear some Paul Humphreys.
Simple groove. Interesting about this is listen to that kick drum. Boom. It's on the 4. Now, as a drummer, like if we both as drummers, if we were playing boom, I probably wouldn't play that 4. I'd just go boom, cab, boom, boom, cab. But he's going boom, cab, boom, 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 which
it's
is interesting.
Really, I mean, like, right? There's also like a little bit of a, like, there's a little bit on that snare that I had not noticed, but now I'm aware that I feel it.
You feel it.
Even though I wasn't paying attention to it.
He's the man. And play a few of his interesting fills. It kind of throws in that little buzz at the
end. Yeah, he's having more fun with that snare than I would have thought.
Woo! That's a fun fill to play.
Yeah.
Couple of open hat chokes there. And then one more fill. And that's him. He's moving into the B section there.
Uh-huh.
Just something interesting about the structure of the song, by the way, is that it has just two musical sections.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just kind of a groove the whole time.
Yeah.
And that B section, which we just went into, and I'll play for you what that means. It's this part of the song.
We got the guy on the bongos, huh?
Yeah, those bongos are a little boosted, so a little louder than they are in the real mix. Other than that, we've got like kind of this really long intro. It's 45 seconds of intro. And then we have, I would border on saying, a almost chorus-free song. Like, this isn't something where there's this big build and then the chorus. It's a B section. It's that part I just played for you, but it feels more like a bridge. It's just like
It feels like verse, bridge, and then it's chorus just from the lyrics, but
just
the chorus sounds like the verse.
But it is the verse.
Yeah,
it's literally the same
music.
That's what
I'm saying.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
To your point,
Let's get it on.
Musically, it's kind of like two parts.
Right.
You know?
Very, very simple groove.
Yeah.
So that's the drums. And
even that bridge, what we're calling the bridge, is more of a build to the chorus, which musically is just the verse again.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, it feels like we need to change this. Actually, to that point, on the album, there is a second version of Let's Get It On,
right,
which is called
Keep Getting It On. Yeah.
And they don't have the B section.
Absolutely.
It's just straight 3 minutes of
the same way on I Want You, there's the song I Want You, then like about halfway in, there's the I Want You instrumental.
Yeah.
Which, as a DJ, you would often play that like when you were like,
yeah,
you know, trying to set the mood.
It feels very much constructed. There was an awareness like, look, we need for there to be a change for it to be radio friendly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like on the dance floor, like, you know, but, you know, to that point, James Brown records famously have Let's Take It to the Bridge. That's just so you have a break from the 10-minute groove you just started at,
yeah,
and you're about to go into again. So that's kind of what that feels like. That's more of a funk-inspired break from the action. So let's keep it moving with the bass. This is Wilton Felder from the band The Crusaders. Second half of this record, I mentioned, has the Detroit players, the Detroit performers from Motown and the Funk Brothers. So James Jamerson is not on this track. The internet is wrong. It's Wilton Felder. And here he is playing, a little foreshadowing of what we'll be talking about later on the episode, a bass line that a certain redheaded gentleman...
A bass line I think is iconic.
That we all think is iconic. Okay, I'm glad you said the word, not me. Because it's dead simple. Here it is with some drums. And he's mostly just playing that four chord cycle, four note cycle,
mm-hmm,
throughout the track. I will play this one moment where he gets a little bit fancy, a little teensy bit fancy with a fill or two. He's just trying to keep himself interested for the 5 minute duration of playing four notes,
yeah,
minus the B section, I should say. So that's Wilton Felder on bass.
Thank you, Wilton Felder, for
all your service.
All of the people walking around on planet Earth that you help facilitate with that super sexy bass line.
Super sexy. Oh, let's not forget there's a second guitar, by the way. And this one's a little bit more on the comping kind of chords tip. And I don't know who this is, but I did mention those three players before. It's one of the other two. It's either Arthur Wright or Melvin Wawa.
Might be Melvin Wawa.
Might be Melvin Wawa, not playing the non-Wawa part. And here it is. And here's how it sounds with the other guitar, actually.
That's crazy when you just have that one in there. The one that we've noticed probably the least.
Yeah.
It sounds a lot more like an Al Green song.
Yes. That's, you know, a what great I mean? Point. Yeah.
It sounds like Simpler, Al Green, yeah, who, you know, is another one who I think had like some great slow jams.
Yes. Big Al Green fan.
Around,
yeah,
the same time. Yeah.
Yeah. I think also there was some heavy competition between Gay and Green. I read some interview where the interviewer like mentions Al Green almost in passing, and mm-hmm, then his tone, Gay's tone changes immediately. He gets kind of like a little like more aggro.
I wonder if that's because, I mean, like Al eventually becomes a reverend. Maybe mm-hmm, Al reminded him too much of his dad or something.
That could be. And by the way, so that guitar part, just playing chords, really keeping it simple, which is very similar to what the piano is doing. Not a lot of fancy stuff. And in fact, when I heard the guitar part, I almost wasn't sure if it was a piano. I'll play you the piano, and then I'll mix the two and tell me if you can tell them apart. And this is Joe Sample, also from the Crusaders, playing the piano and also played on Steely Dan's Black Cow. And now add the guitar. You can't even hear the guitar because they're practically playing the same part altogether.
No, but that piano sounds so good, man.
It does,
I mean,
sound good, yeah.
Geez, it sounds like... Nice and meaty. That's a chunky piano going on there.
Beefy. Very church, too, right?
Very church.
Beautiful,
beautiful
like, part.
I feel like if we had Duran Bernard on the show, he,
yeah,
would be freaking out because he loves that churchy piano.
Yeah, he does.
It sounds great.
It sounds so good. It sounds so good. This whole entire song is produced so beautifully and recorded so beautifully. So... on saxophone, so this is another situation where we've got three different names in the credits. I'm pretty sure this is Ernie Watts.
Ernie Watts.
It might, however, be Pias Johnson. It could be Buddy Collette. Different sources have different names.
Just DM us the real answer.
Just DM
everybody.
Us the real answer if you're one of these guys. We'll try to spread the word.
Or their estates.
And here's the sax part. So that's happening in the horn section. We've got perhaps those three names in some mix. But here's the thing. If that's Ernie Watts, that'd be great because he is the guy who did this. That's right. Ernie Watts did the Night Court theme song. However, if it wasn't Ernie Watts and it was instead P.S. Johnson, he's the guy who has the sax solo on this. So we're not sure which horn player who did which theme song.
It could have also been the third guy.
It could have been the third guy. Poor Buddy Collette. I don't have any theme songs for him. Poor guy. Y'all, I'm sure you're as excited as our audience is to hear Marvin's isolated vocals.
Yes.
We're going to get to that.
Okay.
But first, when we were talking about this episode, planning what to do, the idea of a makeout tape kept on coming up. So I think we kind of need to pause for a second. So I've got to ask you, Diallo, what is on your ultimate, what would be the ultimate makeout tape for you?
Well, I haven't made a makeout tape since my cassette deck broke. But I will say that this does come back to my relationship with this song. I'd probably heard this song in various ways, you know, growing up, but it was actually not until college in the mid 90s when I was like trying to make a makeout tape. And a buddy of mine was like, he was like, "Oh man, I got the old chick in this out." And I remember this song came on and I was just like, about the time the drums came on, I was like, "Whoa, that sounds like audible sex." Like it was a different relationship with it.
Something about the music that really just crossed line.
Something about Let's Get It On, the way that those drums came in, like it just didn't matter that it was already a song over 25 years old or something like that. Like I was like, oh yeah, that's got to go on there. And I think just because of when I was around, like I think about the other songs on there. There was, Die Without You by PM Dawn made the cut. There was actually an Usher song off his first album that made the cut. There was the House of Music album by Tony that I kind of like sampled liberally from, just because so many good, for the lack of a better term, makeout songs. And then of course the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack was really big.
Hey, and you know what, Diallo, let's hear your number one. I know this is like a Sophie's choice, but like what is the number one jam out of all, sex jam?
I think one of the ones I have to mention is Lay Your Head on My Pillow by Tony. Lay your head on my pillow and just relax. Yeah, I mean, like the song was produced by Tony, which tells me that it was the Wiggins brothers, Raphael Sadiq and Dwayne, and I believe the drummer, the guitarist is Timothy Riley.
Okay.
No relation, as far as I know, to Teddy.
Sexy slow jam. That's your number one. Is that still your go-to?
Not anymore. I mean, like, what's interesting about makeout songs? We share a special relationship with them in that if you're in a relationship and, like, that's your makeout song with one person, like, it feels wrong to... So I retired that one before even the end of the 90s.
Okay.
And long before my current wife, and we have our own... You know,
so she's never experienced that particular song.
No, she's not going to know that. That Diallo was young. I was like, she's better off for not having that.
I see.
You know, I will say that my song with my wife is Sure Thing by Miguel. And it's not even just a makeout song. It's like, you know, a song that I associate with us dating and falling in love and even when we got married. So I think our current
song. Can we hear that one? I'd love to hear it.
Sure. It's this is Sure Thing by Miguel. You could bet that, never gotta sweat that. If you bet that. Cash, I'll be the rubber band. You be the match, I will be a fuse. Boom, painter, baby, you could be the muse. I'm the reporter, baby, you could be the... All right, we have pulled the curtain back on my sexy times.
Now we know. I feel like you revealed a lot in a vulnerable way. I appreciate it.
That's
the theme
vulnerable.
Of the show. Very vulnerable.
I feel exposed. Yeah. Luxury, what went on your makeout day? I'm so curious.
Right. When I wanted to get down, in my earlier years, I would just put this on and, you know, ladies would melt. Oh, wait, sorry.
I'm
sorry.
Cat.
That's the wrong one.
I believe
that's
this
the wrong
is
one.
Not true. This is not
that's
your
the wrong
makeup
one.
Music.
I meant to do this one. Oh, yeah, we get freaky to Vivaldi. You know it.
Big Cap. You know it. I'm calling it Big Cap. There's no way this was your make-out music.
No, it's true. I was lying. That's not. But you part of you was like, no, this can't. You thought it was, that it was more of a. It's not that you thought I was joking. It's that you thought this can't possibly be true. I hope it's not true.
No,
that's what was
more
happening.
Like it's almost too cool for school. I want to. I want the vulnerable you exposed as I've exposed myself. Not in that way, HR. What is your make-out music?
I think you cannot beat this. I mean, to this day.
Okay. Oh, okay.
First note.
I buy it. By the way, already knew it from the first note.
That beat, I've wanted to. This is one of those songs where everything about it, that beat, I've wanted. That is it's Prince Erotic City with Sheila E.
And this is the B side. It wasn't even a single. It was the B side to what?
It's Let's Go Crazy. It's the B side to Let's Go Crazy.
Let's Get It On Crazy Style.
It's the B side to Let's Go Crazy, which means
the B-side,
which means that I am first hearing it literally at age 12 when I bought that record. And on the flip side, I'm hearing this song.
One of the most egregious uses of funk.
I was going to say, that's the best part of this song. How many years did it take me personally to kind of really pick up on the fact that she ain't saying what you think she's saying?
I mean, like, do we have the stems to that? Because there's no way she says funk.
I think this is masterful because I think you're right, but it's somehow massaged into you simultaneously thinking that it's, wait, she can't have said that, but she did say it. But no, it's definitely funk. Brilliant song.
All right. Well, we have exposed ourselves yet again, but let's expose some vocals.
The subtext
I'm sorry.
Male vulnerability. You know that we love to get into
We love to do male vulnerability.
What a better episode
show
than this one. Marvin's vulnerability is seeping into our beings right
two
now.
Two guys talking about love on today's show.
Fearlessly.
What are the stems
fearlessly
we have from Let's Get It On?
We got a few more left. We're gonna hear some strings, we're gonna hear some vibes, and then we're gonna hear some vocals. So let's start with the strings.
Yeah.
This is a string section of indeterminate number because records weren't kept, I do know that the name of the...
Barry liked it that way.
The arranger and conductor is Renee Hall. This is all recorded live. And let's hear some of those gorgeous strings. So there's some counterpoint going on there. The lower strings are kind of mirroring the chords and the bass line, and we got some melodies on top. Let's find one more part. It's interesting. Like, it's kind of funky, I would say. Bordering on funky. A little bit of that top line just now.
You know, I have a very complicated relationship with the word funky. Like, I just, maybe it's because of my age. Anytime I hear the word funky, I hear like...
It's white person saying funky.
There's something, it's like somebody unironically saying, it's jazzy. Like,
when you got classical players and strings on a Motown or Marvin Gaye track, it is the equivalent of me saying the word funky.
But you know, I will say, I love Gaye's use of violins in general. I mean, like, those violins are part of what really get me there emotionally when I'm listening to what's going on.
They're also on Grapevine, too. It's also like a Motown
thing. That's true.
It's
definitely a Motown thing. It's definitely that thing, like, you need to feel like a class act, which is why they had names like, you know, the Parliaments and the Supremes.
Right, and
like,
the suits.
You know, it was aspirational. It was like the cleanest of the clean. They don't have the same effect on this album or on I Want You, which are just coming along at a different time in the culture, but they're still, their presence is felt, especially that first violin part you played. I love that sound.
Yeah. So beautiful, so lush, so simple, and just adds another dimension to the entire song. Yeah. Let's go to the vibes.
Are these like a vibraphone?
This is a vibraphone by Victor Feldman. You hear the bleed again. This is the band is playing together. It's really playing the chords there.
Again, it's like that Motown thing where it's like, I want it to sound elevated and super clean, you know? It's almost
orchestral.
The opposite of what, you know, the Stones and other, you know, British bands, they wanted Muddy Waters. They wanted like that down, get it out of the mud type sound.
Right.
And this is Barry like, no, you know, black people have been through a lot. We want it to sound clean. And to a certain extent, it doesn't surprise me that one of these musicians goes on and plays in Steely Dan because... You know, I feel like Steely Dan has a very clean sound, which is one of the reasons why hip hop artists love to sample Steely Dan.
You know,
it's very clean and you can hear
precise,
all the
right.
Yeah, all the precise.
And also the choice of the vibes as an instrument is interesting because it's at the intersection of being a classical instrument, being a jazz instrument, Lionel Hampton, etc. And this is a song that's R&B and soul and pop. There's so many different genre kind of characteristics floating around to make what Let's Get It On is ultimately. And the vibes add another element of jazz, I would argue. Classical jazz.
All right. Now, with no further delay, we are going to talk about one of the greatest voices in not just R&B history, but one of the greatest voices of the 20th century, Marvin Gaye. A voice so silky and perfect that he could take other people's songs and have bigger hits. It's important to note, he wasn't the first singer on I Heard It Through the Grapevine. It was a Gladys Knight and the Pips song, but it is the Marvin Gaye version that we all know and love. It's just a phenomenal voice, and we have it for you now.
I've been really trying, baby, trying to hold back this feeling for so long.
Let's just keep listening. I mean, I don't want to stop.
I do want to say, everybody, this is the voice of a 34-year-old person, by the way. Yeah. Let's keep hearing.
And if you feel like I feel, baby, then come on. Oh, come on. Woo! Let's get it on.
This is one of those songs, like Under Pressure, I feel offended by myself stopping the tape.
I don't want to stop
we
it.
We just have to pause.
But one
and
thing
talk.
That jumps out to me immediately is, like, you can hear him, like, on the louder parts coming back off the mic and then getting in close for
good
the whisper.
Mic technique,
let's get it on. But then he backs. Like, I love this. I love that you can sort of, like, figure out where he is in the room when he's singing different parts.
Well, and by the way, so what we just heard, it's 45 seconds till we get to, that's the intro, right? Like, that's kind of the chorus as an intro. That's as much of a chorus as we get.
The Beatles did a lot of that.
Jumping around
chorus as an intro,
on. And then here's verse one.
We're all sensitive people. With so much to give, understand me, sugar.
And this is also the part of the song where the backing vocals come in. So let's hear what that sounds like. It's super beautiful.
Ooh, since we got to be here.
That's all Marvin on backing vocals.
Let's live. I love you.
So beautiful. So awesome. Simple. Let's keep going. There's nothing wrong.
There's nothing wrong with me loving you, baby, no, and giving yourself to me can never be wrong.
That's just the end of that last
part. This part is so impressive.
Yeah.
Let it go.
Let me love you. Don't you know how sweet and wonderful life can be? Let me love.
That let me love you. Mm-hmm. Interesting counterpoint.
I'm asking you, baby, to get it on with me.
Let me love.
Ooh, ooh.
Let me love.
Ooh.
Now's probably a good time as any to bring up the fact that, according to the book by Ben Edmonds, Marvin Gaye, The Last Days of Motown Sound, there is a woman in the room, and she's quite young.
And it's not his wife.
It's not his wife.
It's not Anna Gordy.
But it is soon to be his. It is soon to be his next wife, and
that's
the mother
true.
Of his two children.
Yeah.
And I found this great quote that kind of explains what Marvin's headspace is as he's singing these lyrics, as he's singing these vocals we've just been hearing.
Yeah. This is Janice Hunter.
This is Janice Hunter, soon to be his wife. The presence of this young girl compelled him to perform the song to her, and in doing so, it was transformed into the masterpiece of raw emotion we know so well.
That's right. So there's one more part of the song I'd love to hear. It's that part at the very end when Marvin really just lets his voice go crazy.
He starts letting
go. Can you play it for us?
Sure, sure. Let's hear a little some of that stuff towards the end.
You don't have to worry that it's wrong. If the spirit moves you, let me groove you. Good, let your love come down. Oh, get it on.
Can't stop.
I mean, there's so many good parts in there.
No
ooh,
bad parts.
You got that. There's so many wonderful parts in there. Not, you know, aside from the loudest part, the most, you know, in the spotlight part, there's so many good thoughts in there. I mean, the man had so many hooks in his head.
There's so much sweetness on the sort of background ooing and cooing, and then there's the just sort of sanctify. Speaking of which, there's a funny section I'm going to play for you now because Marvin's doing all the ad-libs kind of in this section, and he starts to run out of ideas, so he asks Ed Townsend, his co-writer, his producer, he goes, what should I do here? So Ed goes, you know, how about something like sanctify? So Marvin literally sings something like sanctify. Here that is.
Some like sanctify.
That's like say goodnight, Alice. Goodnight, Alice.
Exactly. Goodnight, Gracie.
Yeah, exactly. That's great. I didn't know that's why I even said that. But the thing I always liked about it, sanctify.
Right.
You hear
and then the claps
clap.
Come in,
you hear
right?
That clap. Which just reminds you that it's a human in the studio. It's not
and that,
AI.
That gets us back to the church thing too, right? And it just, we go out. It's only the last 15, 20 seconds that those claps are in there.
There's something so cool and mature and human about Marvin Gaye in ways that, like, you know, sometimes gets lost in the sauce in some of today's music. And it's just like, it's so human. You feel like there's a human singing there. Which tells me that at some point there's going to be an AI function where they're going to have Marvin Gaye, AI Marvin Gaye singing over. Like,
I don't know how you would even do that. I mean, you could train.
It's not going to be good.
How would you even do that? There's so much raw human emotion. It would be all Uncanny Valley stuff, which is what we already have mostly.
I know.
We did that one episode, though, remember the Madonna? We did the Massive Attack episode.
Exactly.
So we showed what would it have been like if Madonna had done Teardrop by Massive Attack. And that didn't sound right. But the Ariana Grande version, that kind of
sounded
possible.
Sounded
plausible.
Yeah, it sounded a little bit like it could have been the real thing.
Shade on Ariana, but
not at all. Please come on the show. We are desperate. Okay, so before we go, we're going to do one more song. This is the part of the show where we share a new song with you, the One Song Nation, and with each other. Doesn't have to be a new song, doesn't have to be an old song. It's just one song that we will probably never get to do its own episode on, but it's one more song. Luxury, you go first. What you got for me?
Well, over the break, I made a discovery, an old discovery, like a band that's been around for 40 years, but I just discovered them, one of those, and perfect fit for the episode because the song is a love song. But the band is New Age Steppers. It was more of a project, this post-punk dub combination in 1981. This gentleman named Adrian Sherwood, who you may recognize as a very famous remixer, Depeche Mode onwards. He's been doing it for 40 plus years.
Yeah.
But in 81, he brought together Ari Up from the Slits with this group of Jamaican musicians. This is all happening in London, so they're all London, England based, and put together this beautiful blend of a dub song, a cover of a dub song by Bim Sherman with some Jamaican musicians and some members of the Slits, just in this wonderful post-punk combination. And the song is called Love Forever by New Age Steppers, 1981.
Love it.
And this goes on. It's a 7.5 minute dub journey, and it's Aries vocals. By the end, she's going crazy and wailing and screaming. By the way, she's only, I think, 18 or 19 when she records this. So that's my one more song, Love Forever by New Age Steppers. What you got for me, Dion?
All right. For my one more song, we've talked a lot about Ed Townsend's work with Marvin Gaye. This is a song by Bill Wolfer. Bill did a lot of work with Stevie Wonder, very similar to how Ed Townsend works with Marvin Gaye. And when you listen to this, it might sound like a Stevie Wonder song. You can imagine Stevie singing this, but I thought it was a really good song. It seems like Bill might have kept this song for himself. The song is called Wake Up, and it's a really groovy song. I'm going to try and find you a good little snippet to enjoy. Check this out. As always, if you have an idea for one more song, you can find us on Twitter or X if you must, but really, really, find us on Instagram, find us on TikTok. I'm at Diallo, at D-I-A-L-L-O on Instagram, and at Diallo Riddle on TikTok.
And I'm Luxury. That's at LuxxUry on Instagram. And on TikTok, I'm at LuxuryXX. And by the way, we're on One Song This Podcast. We love it when you go rank us, rate us, give us reviews, 5 stars on the podcast platforms. It really helps. So now's the time that I'm going to remind you, if you haven't done it yet, go give us those 5 stars, write us that review, and share with your friends. Spread the word, One Song Nation. Let's expand. Let's take over the planet.
Luxury, help me in this thing.
I have been and continue to be producer, DJ, songwriter, and musicologist Luxury.
And I'm actor, writer, director, and sometimes DJ Diallo Riddle.
And this has been One Song. We will see you next week.
This episode was produced by Matthew Nelson with engineering from Marcus Hom. Additional production support from Casey Simonson. The show is executive produced by Kevin Hart, Mike Stein, Brian Smiley, Eric Eddings, Eric Weil, and Leslie Guam.